It's still this. It's related to the same project. Please feel welcome, and where our office is open if you have any questions to approach us anytime. Thank you, Mr. David, Mayor Aksanov.
Good morning. My name is Ludi Tumasi. I am the chair for the purpose of this public hearing and application. The acting chair of the No Water Board, Thomas Kaplunak from Baker Lake, is down here at the in the audience. And the vice chair, Jeff Kushugak. I'm from Raikan Inlet, and Raymond Kayakshak from Kuwazuk have declared that they will not participate in the hearing of this, application to ensure there are no conflicts of interest or apprehensions of bias. I will introduce the members of the board shortly. However, to remove any concerns about board quorum, I advise that the parties know that Robert Hansen is participating in this hearing via teleconference. Robert, are you on the line? Are you hear us? Robert Hansen, are you on the line? Robert, once again, are you on the line, Robert?
Yes, I am, Ludi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you, Bob, for participating on the by teleconference.
No problem, Ludi. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we proceed with the hearing, let us begin with a prayer. I have asked board member Tom and Dr. Tobik from Arctic Bay to have say prayer for opening prayer. Tommy.
Padilami. Atatami near Luan near Lupi, you are Tianun. Atatak mana be calling me Katimani Octagon as you gain it during Timmy, you good. Attending as you rock to good. Kuaro, kuzan na may pabun bikalang mi no nakaktut inukutigi yatit. Tamang mitya kau ni magabigi pinyag na kajangin at jigin ito ni piliyak sa kaktut. Dahil sa mga sibud na pamin inuliyo gawin tamang na tili juti kau tigi yaktain no nauka ang kamagi yakudugo nagjuti nyo tikit sugo. Dahil may man at jigin ito ni kamagi yak sa kaktugo iling nun ang eksimad luta iling nun iling nulo ikayoktaw luta. Mana istiwa katigin ni aktugon, bekalain mi timi uyon piliri aksakaktor at jigin itimi mana. At anir na yula aktugon anak ng nun ijong na itimot. Tasi oktaw do takisiyan ita mana isuma iling ni pijok suri yukurun nagmat. Iling nulikin yula aktugon istiwa ni aktiluta pibikaktitaw yuman luta tamatuming a piliri aga ni aktatinig iling ni pijumig. Iksiwa utabot luta oktaan na pijok aktumig. Najurau, ammarut sahaja gigabut, ammarut tak tak ku, tu kimi waktu gigabut. Namang ming atenya, iling kini juta kartu kita matum inga. Angin kati gigi juta, ubahku kati ngaji gun, tapane bekerai kati ngaji gun. Tamatum inga kini wibat tiga, kujang wibat tiga, jopi bahak tita ujung nagatat. Inga kana gigi tiga, kati mana gigi tiga, tamai tiga, nak gigi tiga lo. Taman nak kujari juta gigi bau iling Yesus siu kerai tiu siu mati ngaji. Amen.
Ako yan namin, Tommy. The Nunavut Water Board is an institution of public government created under Article 13 of Nunavut Land Claims Agreement and is responsible for the use, management, and regulation of fresh water in Nunavut settlement area. On behalf of Nunavut Water Board, I welcome everyone to Baker Lake. The purpose of this public hearing is to review the application filed by Agnico Eagle Mines Limited for a Type A water license in accordance with Nunavut Waters and Nunavut Surface Rights Tribunal Act. With me today is the members of the board. On my far right hand is Bob Hansen, participating on telephone. We participate at sitting over in the corner. And next to him is Guy Kakerniuk. And to my far left is Tommy Tetovic over there. And George Porter is right here, sitting beside me. Service staff members are, and NWB consultants who have helped the NWB technical reviews of application are present. I will introduce key individuals attending today. Dion Filiatro, Executive Director. David Hanstein, Acting Director of Technical Services. Richard Doyer, License Administrator, down by the door. Ben Kopik, Interpreter Translator, it's over this and the booth. Steve Lyons, and Carla Tonelli, and Jack Sheeto, Consultant. William Tillman, Professional Corporation, Administrative Counsel to the Board. Catherine Emery is here with us today, and Bill Tillman is available to us via teleconference. Bill, are you there?
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Thank you. Bill, okay, thank you. You're on the line. In addition, we have several interpreters available for simultaneous translation, Ben Kopik and Mary Hunt. And we also have a Rhoda Perkinson. Is that right? Thank you. Thank you for participating with us. To ensure an accurate record of the proceeding, we have with us a court stenographer, Caroline Schumann. To assist Caroline, I ask that all parties please state their name before speaking. In the past, parties in other proceedings have approached the media prior to the release of the board decision, suggesting comments about what the board is going to do, either procedurally or in terms of final results. Since the board cannot comment on pending matters, either by confirming or denying the accuracy of other statements to the media, the board would appreciate it if all parties would refrain from any such comment that may imply a certain action or decision by the board. The board members will not discuss the hearing or the matters before the board with any of the parties or the media. If you have any question about the board and practice or procedures, please speak to the Executive Director and will assess you. I will now give brief history of the application. In 2003, an initial application was filed by Cumberland Resources Limited, CRL, and forwarded to NERP for environmental assessment in accordance with Article 12 of the NLCA. A Part 5 review was completed in 2006 with a project certificate, NERP PC number 004, issued in December 2006. The project certificate means we can proceed to regulatory, and that is what we are doing this hearing. The NWB provided CRL with guidelines in March 2007 with accordance with Section 48.3 of Act and Article 13.8.1 of the NLCA to assess them in meeting the information requirement of the board. On August 1, 2007, Agnico Eagle Mines Limited amalgamated with Cumberland Resources and Meadowbank Mining Corporation is only owned subsidiary of the Cumberland. For the purpose of all Type A water license document, the terms Cumberland, Meadowbank, MMC, MEA, AME mean the same entity as Agnico Eagle Mines Limited. The NWB acknowledged receipt of revised application from AEM on September 24, 2007. On October 24 of last year, the NWB sent a letter to the applicant with a copy of interested parties outlining the purpose, process, and timelines for completeness and concordance review of application. All parties were requested to provide their determination on completeness and concordance by November 2, 2007. The board confirmed it with AEM on November 13th that submissions were received on completeness and concordance with GN, DOE, EC, DFO, ANAC. At that time, the board requested that AEM provide clarification and confirmation on AEM's ability to respond to the deficiencies identified by the parties and when supplemental information was to be provided. In conjunction with the Geoscience Forum in July, NWB and NERP staff representative took the opportunity to meet with AEM and their consultant on November 21st to discuss the regulatory process in Nunavut as it relates to the Meadowbank Gold Project. In decision of the board requires that it be consistent with project certificate issued by NERP. As a result of this meeting, it was determined that it was necessary for AEM to confirm with NERP if the amendment to the NERP's PC was required to satisfy the conditions number 8 and number 17 of the NERP PC. On December 10, 2007, NERP issued a determination that the amendment to NERP PC for these conditions were not required. Concluding on November 4, 2007, the board received the comments from INAC, EC, DOE, and DFO, respecting the board determinations of completeness of the water license application and supporting documentation. The board did not receive any indication that the application should not proceed through the regulatory process, and the board confirmed it on December 10 the concordance AEM application to the board guidelines as issued in March 2007. On December 10th, the board also confirmed the receipt of a letter from AEM proposing the accelerated schedule for the water license regulatory review process. The board is accommodating the accelerated schedule to the extent possible, given the board's schedule, work plan, and legislative requirements. AEM was notified that the onus remains on AEM to submit full, concise information and appropriately incorporate it into the application on a timely basis. That direction still applies. Further, on December 10th, the board gave notice to all parties and interested persons to begin a true technical assessment of the application and to make submission to the board by February 15, 2008, in preparation for the pre-hearing meeting to be held by the staff. To facilitate AEM request for accelerated schedule on January 25, 2008, the board gave notice pursuant to the Act for the public hearing to be held in Baker Lake starting April 15, 2008. A pre-hearing conference was held by the staff on February 26, 2007, 2008 in Baker Lake. The following parties participated in the pre-hearing conference: EC, INAC, DFO, GNDOE, NTI, and Kiva Lake Inuit Association. At the PHC, the aforementioned parties identified themselves as having a role in the final hearing. It was recommended that the community of Chesterfield Inlet be invited to attend the hearing. For complete this commitment from the PHC, I will refer you to the pre-hearing decision of March 5, 2008. Of note, the NWB, on the recommendation of the Mayor Baker Lake, committed to provide community public session on the mandate of the NWB. Mr. Don Carl, hearing coordinator for the NWB, held a community session on March 27, 2008. The board confirmed its March 4, 2008 PHC decision, the date of this public hearing, April 15 to 17, 2008, timelines for submission of information and list of issues to be presented at this final hearing. AEM confirmed in writing following the pre-hearing that the application files, pilot, and supplemental information received it since September 2007 does not introduce new project component which were not part of original proposal, or that their conclusion would not significantly modify the project, thereby requiring screening or additional review by the NERP under Article 12.4.3 of the NLCA. Written submission for this hearing have been received from INAC, EC, DFO, GNDOE, NTI, and KIA. If I have missed any party's written submission, please let me know. If there are no concerns, I would like to move forward to roll call. I will begin roll call with the applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are here.
Thank you. And then go to other intervening parties. Kibadlo Inuit Association. Thank you. Will you come to the microphone to identify yourself? Oh, there's a microphone up there, sir. Go ahead.
Luis Manso, Kivalik Inuit Association.
Thank you. No, thank you. And Nunavut Tungwabi Incorporated.
Jeanne Hagloch, NTR.
Thank you. And GNDOA.
Helen Ye with GN Department of Environment.
Rul Badalu, GN Department of Environment.
And INAC.
Michael Nadler with Indian and Northern Affairs Canada.
Thank you. And DFO.
Amy Liu from Fisheries and Oceans Canada.
Dave Blint, Fisheries and Oceans.
Thank you, and then Environment Canada.
Thank you, it's Ann Wilson with Environment Canada, and Glenn Grosskopf is with me.
Thank you. If any other interveners would like to speak, please identify yourself. There's none. Are there any members of the general public who would like to identify themselves? I think there's none. It is our tradition to give respect to our elders. At any time, an elder may speak to the application on file. Before we proceed, I would like to request that all parties register with Richard Doyer at the back there, License Administrator. The applicant is requested to make a brief presentation of application before the board. Mr. Connell, how long will you need?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We tried to keep it to 2 hours.
Thank you. Catherine Emmerich, please give swear an oath for affirm of witness.
The name is Larry Connell, LarryConnell.
Will you swear that the evidence to be given by you should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do so swear.
Thank you. Mr. Connell, please go ahead with your presentation. Oh, sorry. Okay, before I do that, okay, go ahead.
Dan Walker, DanWalker.
And you swear that the evidence to be given by you shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Bertrand, V-A-L-E-R-I-E, Bertrand, B-E-R-T-R-A-N-D.
And you swear that the evidence to be given by you shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Yes.
Would you please state your full name and spell it for the record?
Terry Eldridge, T-E-R-R-Y, E-L-D-R-I-D-G-E.
You swear that the evidence to be given by you shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Would you state your full name and spell it for the record?
Gary Mann, G-A-R-Y-M-A-N-N.
And you swear that the evidence to be given by you shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Donahue. I'm counsel for Agnico Eagle Mines. We have a number of other experts who are with us and members of the company. And Mr. Connell may call on them to assist with questions, depending on what the questions are. Perhaps it would be simpler if we had those folks sworn when they came forward, or would you prefer to do them all at once?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go to the microphone and make sure one in. Oh, there's a microphone there.
Sylvain Doir, S-Y-L-V-A-E-N, I-N-D-O-I-R-E.
And do you swear the evidence to be given by you shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do.
Okay, this one. Could you state your full name and spell it for the record?
Ryan Van Engen, R-Y-A-N, V-A-N, E-N-G-E-N.
And you swear that the evidence to be given by you should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
This one?
Yes, I do.
Could you state your full name and spell it for the record?
Rachel Gould, R-A-C-H-E-L-G-O-U-L-D.
And you swear that the evidence to be given by you should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please state your full name and spell it for the record.
Stefan Robert, S-T-E-P-A-P-H-A-N-E-R-O-B-E-R-T.
And you swear that the evidence to be given by you shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you. Applicant, you may go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll do a proper introduction to our team, even though we've done the swearing in. Sitting in the audience, we have Mr. Ebe Shirkus. Ebe, if you could stand up. Ebe is the company president of Agnico Eagle Mines Limited. Next to Ebe is Louise Grandon, who is the Vice President of Environment for Agnico Eagle Mines Limited. Next to Louise is Martin Bergeron. Martin is the Regional Manager of the Meadowbank Division for all of Western Canada, but he's the Senior Manager for the Meadowbank Division. And then seated at the table, I'll start at the one end, is Mr. Terry Eldridge, who is with Golder Associates. Next to Terry is Valerie Bertrand, also with Golder Associates. Dan Walker, also with Golder Associates. John Donaghy, who's acting as our counsel. Gary Mann, who is with Azimuth Consulting as a consultant to us. And then in the back row, starting with Sylvain Duarte, is the environmental coordinator for the mine site. He works on at the mine site looking after the environment. Next to Sylvain is Ryan Van Engen, who is also the environmental coordinator of the site. They work on a two-week on, two-week off rotation. Next to Ryan is Rachel Gould, who is the environmental manager of permitting and compliance monitoring. Next to Rachel is Stéphane Robert, who is an environmental engineer from the Abitibi division or region of Agnico Eagle. And next to Stéphane is Catherine McIver, who also works in the environmental department out of the Vancouver office. Just to inform you, my name is Larry Connell. I'm the manager of environment, social, and government affairs for the Meadowbank division for Agnico Eagle. I wish to thank the board for giving us this opportunity to come before you to make a presentation on the mine. And if you don't mind, I'll do it from this position. I'll try to move through it as fast as I can. Just a first slide is just to give you some indication of who Agnico Eagle Mines is. Our head office is located in Toronto. We're a Canadian-based company. We've been in the gold mining business for over 35 years. And the main operations that the company is built from are in the Abitibi region of northern Quebec, in this region here, the Laurentides mine. We are a mine builder. We're based as a mine production company. We, as you have heard, Cumberland Resources was purchased by Agnico Eagle in 2007 and has subsequently been amalgamated into the one company. We established a new project office here in Baker Lake in 2008. And we are developing projects, gold projects, as you can see, in various regions of the world. We have a division in Finland, a division in Mexico, and of course Meadowbank. And we're also expanding our operations significantly in the Abitibi region. So that's where we're doing business in the world today. On their environmental performance and our record, just to give you some of the background about what we have, we have a strong belief in environmental protection. It is part of our business. We need to ensure it. And we have a company policy that we will use the highest standards in any of the jurisdictions that we operate in. And we have significant in-house expertise to be able to do that. We enjoy an excellent relationship with all regulatory agencies. And that's because we believe that we have to work in a transparent, open-door policy. We have to be honest, we have to build trust, and you build trust by working openly with those regulatory agencies. As examples of that, we have been very successful in partnering with the Quebec government on the rehabilitation of the Manitou abandoned tailings. What we have done is taken an old tailings deposit that was not from our making, but from many years ago, that was causing environmental harm, and have used that tailings in one of our new divisions, our new mines, and have come up with a technique to stabilize that tailings pond and use that as the tailings pond we're using for this new mine. So we're actually solving an old problem by how we move forward. We're also a member of the consortium of companies from Quebec that are paying to clean up some of the abandoned exploration sites that were left in Nunavut. These are not sites of our making, but we believe that we have to improve the legacy that we as a mining company leave behind to clean up the mess that our forefathers left or in this business. We received the 2008 Sustainability Development Prize from Western Quebec from the Desjardins Group, and I think this is in recognition to our belief in being a sustainable company. And we have received certification in Mexico as being a socially responsible company, and that's something that we had to go through an entire process in order to obtain. It wasn't just given. Where is the project? I think everybody knows the project is located to the north of Baker Lake. It's now connected to Baker Lake by a 110-kilometer all-weather access road. And it's important to note that this project is on Inuit-owned land. There is an Inuit Impact and Benefits Agreement in place, and that first payments have already been made on that. A construction decision under the IBA was given in December of last year. There is also a water compensation agreement in place with the Kivalliq Inuit Association under Article 20 of the Land Claim Agreement. And while the terms are confidential, that agreement addresses compensation for water that's used by the project, the water flows we alter by the project, and it provides for monitoring by the KAA to make sure that what we're doing is in accordance with what we said we would do. So we're actually, through that agreement, funding this independent monitoring. We also have a development partnership agreement with the government of Nunavut. Just a quick picture of the signing of the water compensation agreement. Just some quick facts about the mine. The mine has a life of 12 years with the reserves we know now. That's 2 years of construction and 10 years of operation. We are being successful at finding new resources, and so we anticipate that we will even be able to go beyond 10 years, but that's what we know right now. The throughput is 8,500 ton per day, and we're going to be mining the ore from three open pits. There's the Goose Island pit, the Portage pit, and then to the north here is the Vault pit. Our total open pit reserve right now is 3.5 million ounces of gold. Where is the ore? The ore in this situation is primarily under the lake bed. We have some outcroppings of the ore on surface, although they are covered by overburden. But it's important to note that in this case here, our Portage deposit lies also under the lake, as does the Goose Island deposit. This is Third Portage Lake, and it flows into Second Portage Lake and then to the north. So how do we get to the ore? The process is that we will build dikes to actually isolate the pieces of the lake that we need to. So in 2008, our plan would be to build this dike here and a dike across here to allow us to dewater this portion of the lake here so that we could start mining in this area. Then in 2009, we would construct this dike here, and that would allow us to dewater this and expand our pit to this direction. All of the water dewatered from here would be transferred back into Second Portage Lake here. And then in subsequent years, we would also build the dike out here in order to access this portion of the lake and the Goose Island pit. So it's a sequence of these building of these dikes in order to isolate us from the lake and allow us to then dry that lake bed in order to mine. The project schedule, this is just to reaffirm what I've just gone through. We would partially dewater that northeast arm of Second Portage Lake in the late fall of 2008, and this is assuming we do have the permits in place. We would construct the stormwater dike in late 2008-2009, and we would start development on the South Portage pit in 2008 and then the north end in 2009. The mill and shops would be constructed in 2008-2009, leading to the start of production in late 2009 or early 2010. And the first tailings deposition would take place at that point. In building these dikes, it's important to understand how they get done. The first step, this is the lake. We're looking across a section through the lake. Here is the underlying bedrock, and then over top of that bedrock, there is lake sediments. The first step is to put turbidity barriers in. And these are like they are a plastic floating curtain like you would use for an oil spill, except they're deeper. They go down deeper into the lake. And their purpose is to prevent, once we start building here, we will stir up the bottom, and their purpose is to stop that sediment, the water that's clouded up by the bottom material, prevent it getting out into the rest of the lake. The next step is to build two rock structures. So there's one rock structure on this side, another rock structure on their side that goes for the entire length of those dikes. And you can see the turbidity curtains now in place here. And we still have water in between. Once that is completed, then we come back and actually place a till material where that water is in between to actually make a barrier to the water being able to pass through this dike once it's completed. This is just a detail of the construction of that of the filter that sits inside this core, and that's to prevent this till material from actually running through this rock fill. Once the till is in place, we then excavate a trench and put in a cutoff wall in order to prevent water being able to pass through. And so at that point, we're now ready to start dewatering, removing the water from the lake. So as I said, we would then remove the water from this portion of the lake first, allow us to start mining here, and then in 2009 to do this, and then in 2010. This picture actually represents what it would look like at the end of that 10-year period. So this is what it would look like at the end of the 10-year period. Just a close-up view of the facilities, the plant site. So here's the open pit in the background, and here is the camp in this location here. This is the mill building where the ore would be processed to extract the gold. This building here is the maintenance shop for the open pit trucks and equipment. The ore would come out of the pit, come up this hill, and it goes through a crusher located here. And then it's stored inside this round building. That's a building just to store the crushed ore before it goes into the mill. Also of note, we've got cold storage warehousing over here. The fuel tank, there's only one small fuel tank. Well, it's not small, but there's one fuel tank at the site. And the reason for that is the other fuel tanks are located here in Baker Lake, and we can move fuel by the road. This structure here is a land farm. That's intended to be a facility where we can take contaminated snow or contaminated soil, where we've had spills into that soil, so that we can then clean that soil before it's... So that we don't let that material get into the environment. I'm going to go through the types of waste that the project will produce. This is a list of them. And the next slides are going to deal with each one in turn. So the first one is waste rock. This mine will generate approximately 60,000 tons of waste rock a day. And that waste rock is basically rock that we mined that doesn't contain gold of value to be taken to the mill. So it's that rock that we mine that's not ore. We have to remove it in order to access the ore. Some of the rock will be potentially acid generating and some is not. And what I mean potentially acid generating, what I'm talking about is rock that has sulfide minerals in it. These minerals, if they're exposed to air, can oxidize. And when they oxidize, they release acid. And that acid, in turn, can leach metals. And so this is the type of rock we don't want to just put anywhere. It has to be managed to prevent this oxidation taking place. So the mine plan has us testing the rock as it's produced right from the time we drill in the pit and determining whether it's non-acid generating or acid generating. The rock that's acid generating, we're going to place in a cell within the waste rock dump and then bury it underneath non-acid generating rock so that it's essentially frozen away from oxidation or from air so that this acid can't be generated. And then some of it will also go into the base of some of the dikes in those areas where we know it will be underwater, because if this acid generating rock is placed underwater, it can't oxidize because it's isolated from the air. It needs the air contact in order to generate this acid. So we start off with the waste coming from this pit going to this waste rock dump here. And then that remains after the mine is closed. So that becomes a permanent feature after the mine is closed. We have taken the drainage from that. It's collected in a series of sumps. We monitor it, and depending on its water quality, it either comes back here or it goes into this pond. The Goose Island waste rock, which is this pit here, that is not correct, that arrow. But the Goose Island pit waste is actually going to be placed in the bottom of this pit here because it comes later in the life of the mine. The Vault waste rock pile, which is up to the north, it's mostly non-acid generating rock, but it too, with the small amount we do generate, we use the same principle. We take that acid generating rock and make sure it's buried deep within the pile.
your mic up a little bit higher, the introverts.
Okay. Okay. The other product that is produced is mill tailings. Mill tailings are the product, the ground-up product from the mill after we've extracted the gold. And those tailings are taken and placed within the rock-lined bed of this dewatered pad. When I say rock-lined, it's not rock we're placing there, it's the natural bedrock. We're dewatering that basin, so we've removed the water, and we have a natural rock underneath of it. That area is permanently isolated by the dams, this one here, and also this one here. At the end of the mine life, we remove all of the water that's left on the top of these tailings, put them into these pits, and then we cover this entire area with non-acid-generating rock in order to make sure that the tailings themselves remain below the active layer, below the area of the surface that thaws, so the tailings remain frozen in perpetuity. The tailings going out to the tailings impoundment are treated at the mill. So we actually treat the water before it goes out to the tailings to make sure we remove the cyanide, destroy it, and precipitate the metals. And then we recycle the water from this tailings pond to the mill to use it to process new ore. We also will generate organic wastes. And organic waste is that kind of kitchen waste, packaging that comes in contact with food, basically things that would attract wildlife if they were just put into a landfill. So we need to keep those out of the landfill to prevent us attracting wildlife and causing harm that way. So these types of waste are going to be collected at the source and then burned in an incinerator on an ongoing daily basis. And we have coming a new incinerator that will arrive on site hopefully this summer that will meet the new Canada-wide standards for dioxins and furans, and it'll replace the current incinerators at site. We also generate other forms of garbage, the non-hazardous garbage, the non-organic garbage, such as clean broken machine parts, waste, scrap steel. That will be placed in a landfill that will be constructed within the waste rock dump. And so ultimately, at the end of the mine, that becomes buried within the waste rock dump. We will segregate the garbage into piles so that we can, if possible, recycle as much as we can and reuse it to prevent putting unnecessary materials into the landfill. The landfill, as I said, will be located within the waste rock dump. It'll be a specially built area. Only the non-hazardous waste will go there. And any drainage from that landfill will be collected with the drainage from the waste rock dump and either discharged into this pond or this pond, depending on its water quality. So we will monitor that water and decide which of the ponds it should go to based on water quality. At the end of the day, all of that garbage is covered over with rock to prevent it from blowing around or becoming exposed to the environment. We'll also generate some waste oil. The intent is to collect that waste oil, place it in a tank, and then use it to for incineration, for either supplementing fuel to the incinerator, but also to generate heat. Waste antifreeze, waste solvents, chemicals, old batteries, these are hazardous wastes. They'll be isolated at source, pulled from the garbage streams, and stored in a specially designated storage area, and then shipped south each year by barge to a recycling facility or a licensed disposal facility in the south. And we will do that under the proper hazardous manifests that are authorized by the GNDOE. While we don't anticipate or don't want to have any spills or accidents, it's prudent to plan so that when you do have a spill or an accident, we have some way of dealing with them. So we will construct a land farm, on site. That's a lined area with two cells. We will take our snow and soil that's been contaminated by, say, diesel fuel, from a spill of diesel fuel. It will be taken to this land farm facility. And then the runoff from that facility will be collected and treated before it can be released so that it doesn't result in materials reaching the environment. The soil will then be land farmed until it meets a standard. And once we have reached an acceptable standard, we can then pull it from the land farm and use that for reclamation. We will generate, obviously, sewage at the site. So all of the toilets, sinks, shower water will be collected and sent to a sewage treatment plant. During the mine life, the operational life, that treated sewage would then be co-mixed with the tailings and go to the tailings impoundment. During the construction, that treated water will go to our stormwater pond and the sludge will be filtered and incinerated. Next subject I'm going to go into is the how we will use water at Meadowbank. Our drinking water will come from Third Portage Lake, and our processed water will also come from the lake, but it will be primarily coming from recycle from our tailings impoundment. I'm going to discuss in a lot more detail the stormwater, snowmelt, and the water diversions. All of the site runoff and snowmelt will be collected in this natural pond. This is a small pond on the site called Teardrop Lake. It's a very shallow lake. It doesn't contain fish because it freezes to the bottom each year. We will build up that pond so that we can use it as a stormwater runoff pond. And then the water that collects in that pond will either be used in the mill or sent to the attenuation or reclaim pond depending upon its water quality. We will monitor that stormwater and send it to the appropriate pond based upon the standard of that water. So before we get into it, there are two ponds. Basically, this is the reclaim pond. It's a part of the tailings pond. That water does not get released to the environment. That water comes to the mill, goes back into a circle, and stays locked during the life of the mine. So the objective is that if this water quality was poor, this water quality from here was poor, it would come into this pond and it would not get released to the environment. If the water quality was sufficient that it could be released to the environment, it will go into this pond, the attenuation pond. So the attenuation pond will receive the water from the open pits and the waste rock storage facilities and stormwater pond if they meet a standard for discharge. We will test that water, and that the excess water from that attenuation pond would then be released each during the open summer season through a diffuser out into the lake here. And the water quality that we're asking to be met at the end of the pipe in this diffuser has been designed so that it would protect the aquatic life within a 30-meter zone of that diffuser. We obviously are having an impact on a portion of the lake. And so we have designed and put in place a no-net loss plan with Department of Fisheries and Oceans to try and offset that loss of fish habitat. And here are some of the features. What we're proposing to do is build off of the side of our dikes, these finger dikes, so that we could actually create new habitat in the lake to offset what we've lost. There are also some artificial reefs that are created in the lake called seamounts. And you see here, we're also creating features in that exposed upper area of the pit that's been dewatered, so at the end of the mine life, when the pits are put back as part of the lake, we have created some reef habitat for fish within the lake to offset what's been lost. Because the tailings impoundment portion is permanently lost as water. This is just a quick picture of what those finger dikes would look like and how they would be built. Basically, what you're doing is creating a nice sized reef so that this material has to be sized so that the fish can utilize the material for spawning and for protection in their early young phases of life. Mr. Chairman, I think this is probably a good spot for a short break, and then we can come back and go to the next section.
Yes, thank you. Yes, we'll take a short break. 15-minute break for now. Welcome back to your table around 10:15.